Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. Today we talk about music and the human brain. Then we will go to the movies. A new film uses some people from Somalia to tell the story, but they are not professional actors. Listen carefully and enjoy today's lesson on As It Is. Researchers have found that the brains of children who grow up in poverty interpret sounds differently from other children. But an American study shows how musical training can affect the brain so that poor children might be able to better process what they hear. It finds such training could help them improve language and other skills. Christopher Cruz has more about the study and a music program called Harmony Project.
16-year-old Katrina Reyes fell in love when she saw the trombone. She liked the instrument.
I guess it was the sound and the feel and like how it looked. And it was not ordinary for a girl to play trombone.
Katrina has been attending a free music program in California for the past 5 years. It is called Harmony Project. Margaret Martin launched the program more than 10 years ago. Ms. Martin holds a doctoral degree in public health. But she speaks of difficult experiences while growing up. She was pregnant during her teenage years. And at one time in her life, she was homeless, having no permanent place to live. Ms. Martin says that, at first, the goal of Harmony Project was to help children in poor, often violent neighborhoods stay in school and finish high school. But she was surprised to find many of the music students deciding to continue their education.
Since 2008, 93% of our high school seniors have graduated in 4 years and have gone to colleges like Dartmouth, Tulane, NYU.
Margaret Martin noted that some of the students sought college degrees in highly technical subjects. She began to wonder if music had had some effect on the students. It did not make sense until researchers put sensors on the children's heads. The researchers measured how the children reacted to sounds before and after they studied music at Harmony Project. Nina Kraus is a neuroscientist at Northwestern University in Illinois. She is an expert on the brain and nervous system. She led a study of the effects of music. Her findings were published in the Journal of Neuroscience. The research involved boys and girls between the ages of 6 to 9 years. All of the children were taking music lessons. They were studied over a 2-year period. Then they were restudied at intervals for another 2 years. Professor Kraus says she found that poor children process sound differently from other children.
We found that the neural signature for poverty was that children were processing the details of sounds less precisely.
But when a child started music training, something changed after 2 years.
So we were able to determine that the children who took part in the music lessons had nervous systems that responded to speech sounds in a more precise manner.
She adds that the children who spent most time in music lessons were the children who showed the largest gains. Those who studied music for 1 year showed no changes in their nervous systems. She says she would like other researchers to extend the study to thousands of students in many areas. Some of the young musicians at Harmony Project are like Ivan Ignacio Arce. He says they are living proof that music helps children improve in school.
After like Harmony Project, I get like a new understanding, like going to class, participating, having an open mind, discussions, talking with my teacher.
Katrina Reyes says she also sees a connection between music and schoolwork.
Math is like kind of easier because of rhythms and all that. It's easier to count, it's easier to calculate. And yeah, I have seen some improvements.
But for Katrina Reyes and other students, they are not playing only to do better in school. They play music because of the love of their instruments and the friendships formed through music. I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Hollywood directors often make films about people who get persuaded to take part in a crime because they need money. There is a new look to this old story in a film called Fishing Without Nets. This time, the central character is a Somali fisherman who cannot support his family. And the crime is piracy, attacking ships on the high seas. Jerry Watson has more on the movie.
In Fishing Without Nets, a fisherman named Abdi cannot earn enough because pollution has killed off much of the catch he needs to feed his family. Then, a friend talks to him about helping a group of pirates, and he joins. The pirates capture a French oil ship and take the international crew hostage. They hope to get a huge payment when they free the crew. Cutter Hodierne directed the film. It is his first full-length movie. News about Somali piracy in the Indian Ocean had caught his interest. He was especially fascinated by the subject from the viewpoint of the gunman.
And I just was so intrigued by what would lead somebody to get to that point of doing something so desperate and also so kind of audacious.
In 2010, at age 24, Cutter Hodierne went to Kenya and made a shorter version of Fishing Without Nets. He used Somali refugees to play the parts. These untrained actors included day laborers, fishermen, and truck drivers. They were all living in Mombasa, Kenya, at the time. The short film won a Sundance Festival Grand Jury Prize. At that point, Vice Media provided $2 million to finance a feature-length version of the film. It was filmed again in Mombasa with many of the same Somali non-actors. Again, they invented their own speeches. Mr. Hodierne used a translator, a language expert, to tell them only basic facts about what should happen in each scene.
So they knew what was going to happen within a scene, and then they would improvise all of the dialogue within that scene so that it was in their voice. And they are amazing at that. They add so much to it that I couldn't have written on a page. And I considered them sort of co-writers of the movie.
One critic described the movie with words like powerful, deliberate, and absolutely beautiful. The full-length film won a Grand Jury Directing Award at the Sundance Festival earlier this year. I'm Jerry Watson.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is The Voice of America. The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. In many countries, when cows are killed for meat, the heads are put in the waste. That is because many people do not believe meat from a cow head should be eaten. But in South Africa, some people have a strong desire for cow head meat. Many people are selling and eating it in Johannesburg. VOA recently visited a cowhead processing factory in the city. In South Africa, the meat is called skop. The men who eat it say it is less costly than other meats and more tasty. Some meat sellers in Johannesburg recently learned how to prepare cow heads for their customers. They remove the skin from the head. Then they use an axe to separate the meat from the bones. William Maulang works at a cow head processing factory. Up to 150 cow heads are processed there each day.
This meat is delicious. It's tender and is very, very nice fit for men. Even in the old days, like our grandfathers, if they slaughter a cow, the cow ate it was only for men.
Much of the skop meat is sold to sellers who sell food on the street. But at the factory, they also cook the meat for customers. Then they put the meat on a large table. Not on plates. They put hot sauce on it and a starch called opito. Kenneth Ayudo is a Nigerian food shop owner living in Johannesburg. He says in Nigeria, people even eat the skin after they roast it over a fire to remove the hair. Then they wash the skin like a piece of cloth.
It's the way it tastes. And there's too much demand for it in everywhere now because anyone that eats it once wants to eat it again.
Peter Antle goes to a skop restaurant every day.
One thing I can tell you guys is that this is the best you'll ever taste in town, Robert. In town, in the city, Johannesburg. It's skop, man. It's skop. Eish. Ngame, ngame, ngame.
Because of worries about mad cow disease, which causes the brain to waste, few people in Western countries eat cow brains or organs such as livers or kidneys. But South Africa's government says mad cow disease has never been found in cows in the country. Many men in South Africa think skop meat not only tastes great, but also helps them with their sexual desires. And they say it is strongest in cowhead soup, which they eat after they have skop. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. For more agriculture, food, and environment stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today on the program, we explore the history of chocolate, a favorite food for many people. Researchers have known for some time that chocolate is good for the heart. We will report on a study that shows why this is so. We also tell you about the health effects of dark chocolate.
The history of chocolate begins with a plant whose scientific name, Theobroma cacao, means food of the gods. For centuries, people have been enjoying the rich flavor of chocolate, a product made from this plant. Historians believe the Mayan people of Central America first learned to farm cacao plants around 2,000 years ago. The Maya took the cacao trees from the rainforests and grew them around their homes. They cooked the cacao seeds, then crushed them into a soft paste. They mixed the paste with water and flavorful spices to make an unsweetened chocolate drink. Cacao and chocolate were an important part of Maya culture. There are often images of cacao plants on Maya buildings and art objects. Ruling families drank chocolate at ceremonies, and even poorer members of Mayan society could enjoy the drink once in a while. Historians believe that cacao seeds were also used in marriage ceremonies as a sign of the union between a husband and wife.
The Aztec culture in current-day Mexico also prized chocolate. But the cacao plant could not grow in the area where the Aztecs lived. So they traded to get cacao. They even used cacao seeds as a form of money to pay taxes or give as offerings to the gods. Only the very wealthy people in Aztec societies could afford to drink chocolate because cacao was so valuable. The Aztec ruler Montezuma was believed to have drunk 50 cups of chocolate every day. Some experts believe the word for chocolate came from the Aztec word xocolatl, which means bitter water in the Nahuatl language. Others believe the word chocolate was created by combining Mayan and Nahuatl words.
The explorer Christopher Columbus brought cacao seeds to Spain after his trip to Central America in 1502. But it was the Spanish explorer, Hernando Cortes, who understood that chocolate could be a valuable investment. In 1519, Cortes arrived in Mexico. He believed the chocolate drink would become popular with Spaniards. After the Spanish soldiers defeated the Aztec Empire, they were able to seize the supplies of cacao and send them home. Spain later began planting cacao in its colonies in the Americas in order to supply the large demand for chocolate. The wealthy people of Spain first enjoyed a sweetened version of the chocolate drink. Later, the popularity of the drink spread throughout Europe. The English, Dutch, and French began to plant cacao trees in their own colonies. Until the 18th century, only wealthy people could afford to drink chocolate. During the period known as the Industrial Revolution, new technologies helped make chocolate less costly to produce.
Farmers grow cacao trees in many countries in Africa, Central and South America. The trees grow in the shady areas of rainforests near the Earth's equator. But these trees can be difficult to grow. They require an exact amount of water, warmth, soil, and protection. After about 5 years, cacao trees start producing large fruits called pods, which grow near the trunk of the tree. The seeds inside this pod are harvested to make chocolate.
Growing cacao is very hard work for farmers. They sell their harvest on a futures market. This means that economic conditions beyond their control can affect the amount of money they will earn. Today, chocolate industry officials, activists, and scientists are working with farmers. They are trying to make sure that cacao can be grown in a way that is fair to the farmers and safe for the environment. To become chocolate, cacao seeds go through a long production process in a factory. Workers must sort, clean, and cook the seeds. Then they break off the covering of the seeds so that only the inside fruit, or nibs, remain. Workers crush the nibs into a soft substance called chocolate liqueur. This gets separated into cacao solids and a fat called cocoa butter.
Chocolate makers have their own special recipes in which they combine chocolate liqueur with exact amounts of sugar, milk, and cocoa fat. They finally crush this crumb mixture so it is smooth. The mixture then goes through two more processes before it is shaped into a mold form. Chocolate making is a big business. Each year, the market value of the cacao crop around the world is more than $5 billion. Chocolate is especially popular in Europe and the United States. Americans eat an average of more than 5 kilograms of chocolate per person every year. Specialty shops that sell costly chocolates are also very popular. Many offer chocolate lovers the chance to taste chocolates grown in different areas of the world. Chocolate ain't a cheap apology. You ain't gonna make a fool of me. Chocolate ain't a cheap apology.
Researchers have known that chocolate, especially dark chocolate, is good for the heart. Now, they know why. Besides tasting good, researchers have found that dark chocolate protects against heart disease in two ways. It returns movement to hardening arteries. It also keeps white blood cells from gathering on blood vessel walls. Both of these conditions can lead to plaque formation. Plaque can block the flow of blood, causing heart disease. Researchers from the Netherlands reported the findings. The Dutch researchers studied 44 middle-aged men who were considered overweight. The men ate 70 grams of both dark and milk chocolate every day over two periods of 4 weeks.
The heart-healthy substance in chocolate is an organic substance called flavanol. Flavanols are also found in vegetables, fruits, and green tea. Gerald Weissman is with the FASEB Journal, which published the study findings earlier this year. He says the researchers found that there is something about the flavanols in dark chocolate that makes people like it more than milk chocolate.
And this controlled study, the first time it's ever been done, they gave the same amount of flavanol in dark chocolate and regular chocolate. And lo and behold, the men didn't have different amounts of flavanol in their diet, but they ate more of the dark chocolate one because they liked it better.
Mr. Weissman says researchers asked the men in the study to talk about the smell and taste of dark chocolate.
So the taste component or the psychological component of dark chocolate improved, number one, the elasticity and response of the arteries to blood flow. Number two, the way that neutrophils, the white cells, stick to the lining of blood vessels. And number three, markers of inflammation.
And knowing it was good for the heart seemed to make the men feel less guilty about eating it. Researchers may someday develop a treatment that has the same health benefits as dark chocolate. But even if they do, we are sure that eating a piece of dark chocolate will still be more fun.
Dark chocolate has been shown to help prevent heart disease, but eating too much of it may cause people to gain weight. Now scientists are looking for a way to put dark chocolate's helpful ingredients, or parts, into pills. That way we can get the benefits of dark chocolate, but not the weight gain. Cacao has flavanols that may help reduce the risk of heart attack or stroke. These chemicals may lower blood pressure and cholesterol levels and improve the body's use of insulin. Insulin helps control the amount of glucose, or sugar, in the blood.
Steve Kumanelis is a chocolatier. He makes and sells chocolate treats in Washington, D.C. He says dark chocolate is an increasingly popular product.
A lot of people are gravitating towards dark chocolate because they just decide they love it, and they also have been reading all about the health benefits of dark chocolate.
But those health benefits have yet to be confirmed in studies involving large numbers of people. Also, during the manufacture of chocolate, many flavonoids are destroyed, while sugar and fats are added to make the chocolate taste better.
Scientists want to learn the benefits of flavanols before they are changed in the manufacturing process. They have announced plans for a 4-year-long study of 18. The subjects will take small amounts of pure cacao flavanols. The study is believed to be the largest of its kind. Joanne Manson works at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. She is the lead researcher in the study.
This capsule of cocoa flavanols will avoid having the calories and the sugar and the saturated fat found in chocolate.
And the flavanols will not have any taste.
The subjects in the new study are to be separated into two groups. Members of one group will take pills containing flavanols. The other group will take placebo pills, substances that do not have anything in them, other than, perhaps, sugar. Whatever the result of the study, chocolatier Steve Kumanelis is not worried about his business.
People like the experience of actually biting into a piece of chocolate, whatever their favorites are.
The flavanol benefits test is just starting. For now, people will have to get their flavanols the tasty way by eating dark chocolate.
This Science in the News was written by Dana DeMage and Christopher Cruz, who also produced the program. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science on the Voice of America.